Mr. James?
Precious Heavenly Father, we thank you for today, Lord. Thank you for the night, Lord. We ask you every decision we make according to your will. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
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 United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right.
Good afternoon, Lord, Mr. Chairman. I'll just start out by saying that we called this meeting at the request of the board for the special exceptions and Airbnb workshop. And basically what we want to discuss and talk about this afternoon, from the best of my understanding from the last couple of meetings, is the process of how we handle special exceptions, the application process, how they're establishing our LDRs, and the process that the board goes through in the meetings with the public hearings as well, and how they're advertised, and to hear from the public today. I'll go ahead and establish some boundaries from the public, go to 3 minutes sections for each one of them, and we'll go through it that way, and then we'll just be an open forum. You can ask questions, maybe ask some questions. We'll just hash it out. But I think, first of all, it would be the best idea for us to start out with building and zoning. Let Leon just give us an explanation of kind of, hey, here's LDR, here's an example, here's the application process, here's an application. You know, the roundabout
of what we do, why we do, in each zoning case. Okay? Yes, sir. If there's anything further questions, I just probably want to start with that. Hi, good evening. So, I know it's last board meeting, I wasn't able to be there. And from what I understand, it got pretty lengthy. I understand the questions and concerns regarding special exceptions. When someone walks into the office, they want to have a power pole, a camera, a wheel go up, you got a copy of the LDR association permit, Mr. J, and we find the zoning district. And it has a special exception for one or three special exceptions. They fill out an application, they got to turn in a survey, they got to have a septic tank permit, they have their own driveway, and we advertise it 10 days prior to the meeting. And we post one of the bill, post boards at the proper location, and we run before the board. Also, prior to that, we mail out letters to the property owners that property owner within 100 feet from the property website. This is where you download and you pick the radius that you want to pick. If you're up in the first district, you might only get 4 or 5 letters. If you're down in the town of Warren, you probably only get 20 letters. And very simply, you mail them out. A brief explanation, like the first time to apply for an RV special exception, and what is it allowing them to use a camper on their property, installing for single family residences, and here's what it is. Good thing is it has everyone else's phone numbers on it, too. So, that's how you get a phone call.
Yep.
Or they call the office if they have questions or concerns. If they go to the property, look at it. So we encourage the owner when they apply, we tell them this, and tell them to go around and talk to their neighbors. Now, after that, when the board passes, we get a resolution number, and we give them a permit. They go out there, they set the pole, and we limit the amount of power that pole is. Service, is it RV control? It's not meant to be permanent. If you go to any campground site, you have a choice of RV control.
Yeah,
that's it. And that's what it is. If you read in there, they're not supposed to live in a camper full time. RV people probably do live in a camper sometimes. things like that. Come to a little postcard in the mail, and people mail in their renewals. So this past year, we mailed about 700 of these national routes. We branch out to some amount. It was bulk rate. And
Leon,
yes,
you said that only 206 renewed it last year,
yes, sir,
out of 700.
Yes, sir.
What are we doing about the others that ain't renewed it?
Well, that's the other.
Well, then we need to fix it where it goes on their taxes. Where
well, we've asked about that, and the property appraiser has indicated that that's not his responsibility, that that's a separate item, and that that's for us. proceed because we need to written complaint. And don't get me wrong, the state of Florida passed a law that we have anonymous complaints. So any ability to initiate those cases is wrong. I ain't trying to give him no more work than what he has, but that's just the only truth. Okay, I'm trying to answer any other questions you have. That's time to brief overview of where we're at.
If they don't renew, why can't their power be cut off?
They can't. I'm going to move back to the problem of we send out the renewals, you know, right now. In November, and they've got until April to pay. The busiest time for the building department starts January, and it runs through the springtime so that everybody gets ready to start their projects all at the end of the year. The slowest time for us is really from Thanksgiving to Christmas when the holidays are there. Also, the holidays for us too. So there's me. There's Jason, who just got hired. Steve. That's it for the entire town. Steve is part-time code enforcement and part-time veterans officer. You know, Jason pretty much catches field inspections for residential stuff. I do all the commercial inspections. I also do all the processing for the paperwork.
Hey, we're having a hard time hearing, so if you would, y'all come up to the podium and speak in that way Mr. Joey and all of us can hear your questions and hear your name. We need to get your name for Ms. Bellin. Needs to get your name and all that.
Appreciate that. On the flip side of that, the man came up and spoke at the last meeting with Swanee Sewer and Water. Most of all the applications that come in and those meters that were set in those grinder stations that is helping keeping that water plant, that sewer plant going, is the RV that he was pleading with the board in recreational areas to keep allowing those because that's what's keeping them alive. So if you take those off the spectrum, some of those people's not going to build houses. You're not going to have that revenue coming in at 20. It's going to be detrimental to the water plant, the sewer plant, and other stuff. And I think most of the ones that we're not getting reviewed or renewed, the REs and stuff, is not the ones in Suwannee, because most of the ones in Suwannee are a lot nicer and stuff throughout the county. So you got to flip back and forth. You got challenges on all sides on the RV, but in Suwannee, on some aspects, it is beneficial to y'all's town to have those to help with your water and your sewer system.
The property down there that's serviced by water is gone away from. I'm saying to give enough water. Right now, I got water. I got a lot of hands on water. I have my choice to be able to start from scratch. I'd be in here for an RV since I buy me a $100,000 RV and I talk about that. And you have this luck. I'm paid. I send you your $400 a month. Instead of paying you $2,000 or $3,000, that's my point.
Yes, sir.
I'm not complaining about paying the taxes. I'm just saying the people that are putting all of these on there aren't carrying the same burden I'm having to carry to have the water from water taxes.
Yes, sir.
And you're shortchanging all the taxpayers on home in this county because you're lowering your tax base and that makes you have to raise your millions to meet your budget.
Right.
And those people that are putting capital on there wouldn't build houses if they couldn't put the capital.
Some would. Yep.
Okay.
Thank
you.
Hello, my name is Warren Farrow. I have an RV special exemption. I was approved in late 2020. You know, when you file a permit, that covered, you know, basically my understanding that first year, so 2021 was covered. I never got a renewal in the mail. I was on the lookout for it. It's my understanding there may have been some mailer issues, but you know, I was on the lookout for it. I received all my tax forms, but I never received the RV special exception renewal. So I went into the office and I paid my renewal because I wanted to keep it. But how many of those didn't receive it, didn't know to renew it, didn't know that they needed to pay it, you know, out of the 200 to 700, that's a big discrepancy. And that's leaving a lot of money on the table. Now, this is not my primary residence. You know, I don't live in the camper full time. I use it for, you know, recreation and enjoyment of the area. So my property is not homestead exempt. And between my property tax and the RV special exception that I pay separately, you know, both of those combined are close to $1,000, what I think. So, you know, when it comes to, and that's a 25% increase that's happening this year, because I don't have that homestead exemption. I'm expecting it to go up, you know, every year. So, you know, that's one issue. I've heard some other concerns of, well, there's, you know, people don't have anywhere to put anything, and so it turns into a big trash, you know, trash lot. Well, the same could be said for a lot of the mobile homes that I've seen around. You know, there's kids' toys and abandoned cars and trailers and all sorts of things. You've got it all around the place, right? So that's really dependent on the person and how they're going to keep the property up. We are allowed to have one 10x12 shed on the property, and so I have one of those. You know, I have one of those, and that's where I keep, you know, most of my stuff. So. I think for now
that's
it.
Thank you.
Mr. Barrow, I have one question for you, Lee.
Yep.
You said you had a permit. Are you in Suwannee?
No,
it's
in Old Town.
I'm in Old Town.
You're in Old Town.
Right.
Okay. That's it. I just wondered if you were one of the ones on the waterfront.
No. And I have 60 amps with the power. You know, and I have a motorhome. So it's a Class A motorhome. You know, and these things aren't cheap. You know, so I know... in the last meeting, you guys also started to deny pole barns. You know, I recently had a pole barn installed. You know, I feel it's necessary to protect the value and the investment of the RV. You know, I got it from Reed's Metal, so it's a beautiful looking pole barn. You know, and I've got the RV there to protect it. And I want to be here to contribute to the community. And you know, if the taxes have to raise a little bit, you know, to help. You know, contribute you know, my fair share or whatever, that's fine, I guess, but, I don't know why it has to be a separate permit, you know. Why can't it just go, like right now, I know that there's a fire assessment that's going to be included soon. So, you know, right now my property tax is still listed as vacant land. It's not vacant. You know, it's been cleared. I've got grass, I've got the RV, you know, it looks beautiful. But, the septic that I had installed, it was the smallest you can get, put inside, 900 square foot septic tank size for a 2-bedroom. So it's, so from a tax perspective, I'm not sure what could be done there, but it seems easiest to me that it's just included as part of, if you have a home or a mobile home, that's all defined on the tax payment and the tax bill. So mine is included together.
I'd like to speak on the pole barn side of it. The reason that we're addressing that is we don't have time to go out to police each place where these RVs are. But what we are finding is we're some locations where we issue pole barns to go to the RV. We go back out, the pole barn's closed in. There's no RV. They're living in the pole barn. You're wanting to protect your investment. Every RV park that I see going to Ocala, wherever I go, with all those RVs, high-end RVs, you don't see pole barns out there with all them RVs pulling on the pole barn. They're sitting in there open because they're supposed to be their recreational vehicle. This is the roof. The structure is supposed to be able to withstand the weather. And if it was that big of a deal to have a pole barn over your RV, then every RV park would have pole barns for you to pull them up rather than over the slips.
So that does bring up an interesting point because I wasn't at the last meeting. I wish I could have been there to explain from my side of the table and Steve's side of the table. I like the fact that they have to apply for a variance for the open pole barn because it's an accessory structure. And here's why. Somebody comes in, they have their RV special exception, and she says, hey, I want to apply for this. They've now submitted to us an application for a variance. We're going to advertise that in the paper, bring it back to the board. We're going to vote on it, yay or nay, we're going to approve the site plan for this specific structure. They come back, we have a signed resolution for it, it goes in the file. So now we have indisputable evidence of an application, advertising, order minutes, resolution. Now permit. We now have five exhibit items that should they enclose that, we can use before the magistrate for a code enforcement hearing or enforcement cases, whereas non-permit structure, it takes us a lot more work to build that case right for them and show, like, hey, when they applied for this RV, there was, nothing here, here's a survey, or aerial Google images, whatever it might be. So from an enforcement side of things, it's nice to have that paperwork.
So you're saying that the ones that we didn't allow have, we should have let them get their pole barns over their campers. That way...
Yeah, the guy that specifically said he was going to close his in, you should have gave him enough chances to run it for himself. Because we would have then used every bit of ammo that he signed, every bit of application that he before us as evidence against him. Okay. It would have been extremely helpful. And whether or not he done it today, tomorrow, next year, whenever, it would have been real easy to go back and pull this documentation up. That's my two cents to that side of the equation. I mean, it's my
on from us. From my side also, and of course, if I go to court to do a code enforcement and you've got a pole barn on your property, you have no permit, how are you going to justify how that pole barn got there?
Well, you can't justify how it got there. It's a site-built structure that's not permitted, but But let's pause for a minute and say the person who purchased that property didn't do a full code search or permit history, and they are now in possession of this property with this non-permitted structure or whatever. They go out there, and they've been told they can do anything they want, or whatever somebody told them to sell them, whatever. They are, we come back and show them. It makes it easier for us, and that's maybe 5 years ago, it was a flat no across the board. Then the more we started looking into it, we could see these non-permanent bull barns coming up left and right. Well, let's make a way. Let's make it with us. That's
no, Leon, the one thing that has went away through the years of this is the engineered pole barn versus the non-engineered pole barn with FEMA and wind loads. That used to be a big thing before we started doing this section this way. Now I never hear nothing about a unengineered pole barn. And actually, we had a company running in the county that way.
Yeah.
Hey, what do you want to do? You want to do it this way or you want to do it this way? We'll save you a couple $100. And so that kind of went away with the process.
You see more of that now. 10 years ago, you didn't have these barn kits like you have now. You used to have to be built differently. And so times have changed with the way that's constructed, without a doubt. And they're quick. They go up in less than a day. They're there. I'm sure if we look around in the county, we can find several of them that have been enclosed. But it's when we do find them, we can go back and see them there. Here's what it should be. I can easily walk up there, use that 24-hour notice, go shut the power off, and no matter if they're trying to say, no, this is my living structure,
no.
So I can say, well, I'm cut the power off. And you get compliance real fast when you start cutting the power off. Problem is going around checking.
We allow the pole barns go up. You know they're going to pour a concrete slab on it. Most of them. They're going to put their camper underneath it. Will that increase the taxes on their property? I'm looking at making some more money for the county.
First thing we need to do is collect all the taxes.
That's right. That's right.
$50,000 right there.
Yep.
If they sent out 700 mail outs.
And only got 206.
206 renewed. Should have collected 210,000. We collected 61,800. So we lost 148,000.
150,000,
yep. So this is our scenario with a lot of 20. My question is, so it costs quite a bit of money to push.
Hi, I'm Colin Dodd. We work for property in 20. That we would like an RV attraction to work with camper on, to be able to take our family, our own children, have a good time away from our own home that we homestead. My question is why, when you pay the $4,800 plus roughly $1,500 or a little bit more for water, sewer, power, how come that's not considered an improvement and the taxes are out? I mean, you have to pay that to be down there. You have to get the RV exemption and to transfer there and stuff. You have to have water, sewer, and power. I mean, I know down there it's 100 amp service. It's not 60.
Also, what Mr. Warren said also, you pay that also.
We also pay $1,000 in taxes.
Right.
I mean, I don't know about everybody else, but, you have owners that are living here.
I'll share it with you. Also, the 310, let me say this real quick, the 310 that it rises, I'm not sure the exact number for the fire assessment, and the solid waste. I'm being told from the property appraisers that that cannot be added to the taxes, so why is that not being added to the RV exemption fee that you pay? So you pay the $300 for the RV exemption, and then they have to pay the fire and solid waste, something separate.
It's fixing to be that way.
Okay.
That's what we're working on.
It's coming. We've been actually moving forth in baby steps. They've went from no regulation on RVs, collecting no fees. People have been living in them for years. as a primary residence, paying no taxes whatsoever, using the ambulance, because when they get sick, they need ambulance. The fire, they're using the same roads,
but
they're not paying any taxes or anything to, per se, to some extent, and we're trying to slowly work towards getting there on that side.
We're doing everything we can to make our property pretty. We've been there every single weekend pulling stumps, so we've already applied for our culvert and stuff. I mean, we want to be able to enjoy
that. How big is your lot down there?
1.67 acres. It borders a pond. My neighbor is Carol West, and my other neighbor is Bill Colson and E3. And there's nobody. And then on down a couple lots and those campers. But most of it's unusable. I mean, it's swampland in the back. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I just want to clear something up and explain something to everybody. This is the other truth. Prior to this year, if they had an RV special exception on the property and the property appraiser went out there, he assessed them with a special exception on the property. It was when fire increased and saw the waste increase and that company took over to make the adjustments across the board. They didn't recognize RV special exceptions. So they dropped every one of them off of the tax bill. And so the truth is that 700 some of them didn't pay their solid waste assessments or their fire for this past year. We found that out after the fact and resent that back to them, and that's where they're at now. They've since then been added back on and got notified that they
how many we got? 700 and
my understanding, they was paying those taxes as a vacant piece of property, even back before they did the change, because they didn't have a tax key for the RVs. They was just facing vacant land.
Say that in the past 5 years, we've gotten to the point where now, way better system than what it was. It's not a perfect system. It still needs to work. And far improved than what it was. And we done the mail outs. Back when Richard was here, he helped with the first mail out. And then the last two mail outs was the bulk mail outs with the print shop. First mail out was just a notification that, hey, why am I receiving this bill? Here's why you're receiving it, and here's what it's going to be. This is when you'll receive your bill. We tried to educate everybody on it best we could. Your previous bill department staff did do these mail outs. It's a lot of work at this point right here. I mean, we've sent hundreds of hours building this list to get to this point.
How many returns did you get out of that? Do you happen to 10%, 4%?
What do you mean returns? Like
bad addresses.
Now, we don't get a bunch of them back. Bulk mail out, so I imagine if it goes wherever and they throw it away, it doesn't come back hardly at all. Now, the mail outs that went out from the company where we was adding them back to it, Miss Martha has a box of them that back to her, because they went out of first class or whatever it was, and so yes. Would it be easy to say, hey, you have an Excel spreadsheet, and it automatically updated property addresses to new owners when they bought sold pieces? Oh, that'd be nice, but we don't have that option right now. I'm sure there's a way, but we're just not there yet.
Did we as the county have a contract with a company to do this? We did?
Yes, sir.
Then why didn't we hold the company accountable for this state?
They did get prepared and mailed it all out this year.
It's only been done 1 year.
And they dropped how many people?
I'd have to go back and look at the numbers. I don't think it was that many as far as between 45 and 200.
Can we get them to go to the podium so we can hear their names?
Oh, yes. I'm sorry.
Name.
Yes, sir. Go ahead, WC.
Can I speak a minute?
Yes, sir.
Keep talking. All right. In my opinion, until the board sits down and comes up with a fair number for everything's concerned here, there ain't no way to fix this. The only thing going to fix it is that everybody pays what they should pay to reflect where they're at. The people that come here to stay in their campers on the weekend and enjoy things, they come do it because they can afford to do it. The people that live in them campers out there, they live out there because that's what they think they can afford to do only. So both ends of it's got to be fixed, and this money that's going to take it on both ends. The ones out there living and with generators and with everything else, the only way you're going to get rid of that mentality is by making the fee where they can't come pay a $300 and then everything's open. The other one, the same thing is going to have to be applied. It's going to have to be adjusted to where it's fair for the residents and for the people coming with their RVs. The way it is now, it's too easy to do it. And then everybody else has to accept the shortfall of it. The taxpayers that live there are the ones that have to tote the burden for the one there that's you know, able to be there for just a few $100 a year. And the only way to fix all of that is by adjusting the rates to where they're fair. You know, they need to be fair for the camper as well as the residents. But that's the only way, if you're going to keep this system, the only way you're going to make it work is adjust the rates on it to where, you know, the people have to pay what is fair for them to pay for where they're at. And we can talk about it till doomsday, but that's the only thing that's going to fix it.
Okay.
Well,
I'm going to
And that's my two cents.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Hey, real quick, to kind of expand on something there that Study C said, as far as fixing things, also think that expedient code enforcement has to happen. Because the longer it sits there, the longer it goes on, and I know that we hit some road bumps, with code enforcement, and we change colors now. I know that, but I almost think that this should be, if he has a case, he's talked to them, give them their 30 days or whatnot, go ahead and bring them in. Don't let it sit out there a year.
Yeah.
Because it just, one, it creates anger from the other citizens, and it allows that activity just to sprawl out of control.
And one more thing, Jamie, I need to say.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Heard the gentleman talk a while ago about some of these people that hadn't paid, hadn't got a reminder or whatever. When these people apply for these special exceptions, they know then it's renewable every year. You remember a year ago the guy blamed us for taking his hanger away from him because we didn't notify him every month? Y'all remember that.
Yes,
well, it ain't our job to notify people to pay their bills. If you don't, the light company don't call them and tell them they better pay their bill, it's going to be turned off. When it's overdue, they turn it off. I mean, we don't have the people to ask the resources to remind everybody to pay their bill. When they start something, they know what they're starting. And if it ain't paid, it needs to be turned off. If their exceptions ain't paid, they should be revoked for a period of 1 year at least. And if it happened twice, they should be taken forever. This is the only way you're going to get a program like this in line, is you got to have some consequences. Excuse me. You got to have consequences. We all live with them.
I'm totally in grips with you, Leon, on trying to get a streamline, something better on trying to get a handle on getting ahead of this stuff. Like, as of right now, say if you got a vacant piece of property and you're pulling an RV on there, that the side is falling off of it, I can't, as a commissioner, say you can't pull that on that piece of property. I'm going to Tallahassee tomorrow to court because I did that and didn't know I was not allowed to do so. So we do need to streamline what can and can't be done, make certain rules.
So there's other counties that we've looked around to try and figure out. It's not just us.
I got one other thing. What I've been thinking about, everybody, I mean, we live in a free country. You should be able to utilize your property. We're in a unique area here with fishing and hunting and recreational. I think we ought to be able to come up with some kind of thing for the RVs. If they're using it for recreational, they can have to use an RV for 6 months out of the year. And if they use it for more than 6 months out of the year, they have to build a permanent structure. I've been racking my brain back and forth trying to come up with a fair way. That way you won't have somebody living there year-round messing up. But, I mean, if you buy a piece of property and you want to go to the river, you want to go on, you ought to be able to utilize that property, but put a limitation that you can't live there permanently. Some of the other counties are doing that. The gentleman talked about the coastline and the counties. We're not... Taylor County allows 4 RVs per lot. We just allow 1. We're not, I mean, there's a bunch of them way worse than us. Some are doing a lot better than us. But I'm strongly thinking about maybe we could look at putting some kind of a time limit on an RV if it's going to be used for recreational purposes and along those lines.
Yeah, so to kind of articulate on something you said about the dilapidated RVs, where there's some other counties that have ordinances where the very specific language is legal, grade-worthy, ag. And then there's some counties that the requirement that you have a homestead piece of property somewhere else to apply RV special exception. workshop, I always think that we're on one of the situations right here. You get a sworn in, they've got to stop on them for 90 days till they try to figure out a thing. You got other counties that shut it down. You got other counties that are adjacent to us and a lot more. You know, somewhere there's going to be a way to figure it out. But right now, our department, our staff, is the best we've got right now. I'm open to any suggestions, any ways to make it better. Absolutely.
Leon, I do believe this. When we enacted the RV special exception renewal stuff, that was a sight better than where we was at. Steve, whenever he come on board, he went to school, went down south and got certified, and we did tell him to not go looking, because honestly, we was going to get the complaints because everybody was fed up with the code enforcement stuff. So we have made major steps in code enforcement. But I do think it's time to direct Steve to take his blinders off. I do believe that. I also believe that with these exceptions, I would like to see something other roadworthy tag, because they should be able, whenever you say mandatory evacuation, they should be able to hook to that RV or drive it, whichever one it is, and get it out, get it evacuated. I think we need to make sure that in our thing, if we continue this, but I think we have come a long, long ways. I mean, it used to be $150. We went all the way back to 1993, the best we could, the best of our ability, and to get these things renewed. Yes, there's some turned into homes. We know it did. We handled it. And there's some that has been gone away. I mean, they've turned into homes. And I would like to know how many of the RV special exceptions, providing they're not homesteaded somewhere else, because we do have some people that is fortunate enough to own multiple pieces of property. They do intend on coming here and building homes, and we have had some of them turn into homes. But they just need some time to enjoy their property, get it prepared, get it ready, and spend some time of their hard work also on something they've worked very hard for. So I think that our program is not the most terriblest thing out there, but does it need some help? Sure. But what don't? I mean, at the end of the day, what can't we improve? I guess is a good question. There may be some hardship stuff we need to look at. We all kind of run into that at the last board meeting. So there's some stuff out there that I think that we could definitely improve. And I'll shut up rambling about this, but we got to remember that homestead exemption, if you got a home valued at under $25,000, all you pay is a county assessment, which used to be $180. And this board went in and went from $150 on these. We basically tried to double that assessment, which we didn't quite get it there, but we did try to double it to $300 to where at least that RV did pay double what the average homestead exemption person paid to the county. So then we went in and upped the assessment to $310, and we collectively as a board directed Dwayne to look at this and see if we could add this to it, and now we can. We know we can. If not, double the assessment to $600. So they are paying some decent money along with impact fees, and they pay a minimum of $1,000 impact fee. And my problem was this, is if Mark pays $1,000 and lives in a camper for 6 months or a year or 2 years, does that $1,000 cover his impact fee if he builds a 2,000-square-foot home? No, it don't. You still owe $1,000. And so we are structured that way, which I did not realize that until I'd done some digging. So you're getting a partial payment on your impact fees also. But the one thing that I've heard today is the vacant property stuff. Vacant property averages $33 and, across the board if you combined it all together. So if that's the case, we're going from $33 on vacant property to $610 plus a $1,000 impact fee. So can we do better? I hope we can. I hope we can all collectively listen to and put a good program together and make this a better program, or do away with it, one of the two, and quit holding these long, drawn-out meetings. So that's my 2 cents, and I'll hush. But thank y'all for y'all's hard work. Steve, I know you worked hard to get where you're at.
I have one thing to add to that, Mark. The aspect of taking the blinders off until we get this thing fixed where we can more streamline it, their office can't handle the amount of complaints and stuff that is coming in legally. There's no way we have the manpower to take the blinds off. You could go in Tim Stevens, Skyline Heights, he'd be there a year. One small subdivision.
But
we can't process what we got in our lap now. We've got to come up with a better process to move these through the chain of command before we start going out and saying, okay, this address, that address, we can't process it. We don't have manpower.
To answer that question, we got had it in the last board meeting, and hopefully we're going to settle it tonight. We had a lien put on a piece of property, $60,000. How are we going to handle that? I mean, we'll talk about it later in the board meeting, but no, you're not going to. If you don't put some teeth.
If the man don't pay it, we ain't going to get it. And we're going to keep going to court thinking more money in it.
Well, I'll tell you.
In it, and
but at the end of the day, there is a cash flow here. Hire somebody full-time, hire him full-time, or hire somebody full-time and let him go to work. I mean, I don't give a damn if he stays 6 months in the high lines, wherever you said. I don't care, but we got to, number one, we got to put a program in place that works. And we got to have the backbone to say, hey, by George, this is it.
I'm ready, but we don't have the money.
Well, you're never going
to
get the money
to take care of the county as is.
You're never going to get the money if you don't open up your revenues and stand tall to it.
All right. Here's just my point of view, because I'm one of those out here and just about all of it. The majority of my cases, I got 143 cases right now, 67 have to do with RVs. 7 of those are ones that are legal RVs, and that was just when people put more than one
so
RV.
So you got 7 out of 745. That's wrong, right?
Okay. And so they pretty much correct themselves after I show up and say, you can't have but one. That's what you signed up for.
Yeah.
They'll usually pull up without me having to push. All the rest of those RVs,
you're going to have that here.
Those are just illegal. So some things that would help if we want to go forward. Not a passing ordinance that says no vacant property RVs. You can't just pull one on vacant property and stick a generator on there and no RV storage sheds on vacant properties. Because like City of Gainesville, this is on their ordinance. They have this. I've got a copy of that at the office. That way, when I drive up on vacant property, I see an RV. I know it's illegal. I ain't got to go research it. I don't have to go put a lot of time into it. Just write it up. The other thing is if we come up with a land development board, if we switch over from a magistrate to the land development board, we could have monthly run cases through it. We're still going to need a magistrate or a lawyer to be part of it.
I did speak to Mr. Lindsay today, and I've been trying to stay off of it since I get word in here. Me and him have discussed getting with you and setting up a schedule, whether it's a monthly schedule, a quarterly schedule, so that we can have... You know, if you write it up today, you know it's going before the magistrate if it's not resolved on this day. So we have discussed that briefly today, but we need to get with you and iron out something.
And another thing we've got to fix are LDR rules.
Right.
We have to make whatever we're going to prosecute in that process reflect the same way in the LDR, so nobody can appeal us and take us all up to the circuit court.
And the other issue that I want to address, of course I'll have to bring it to the board in our meeting workshop so we can't vote, but I want the board to give us permission to move forward on like the case we anticipate coming up tonight, is if this doesn't happen, let's start the foreclosure proceeding. It's been a year since guy owes the $60,000, the value of that property is right there on it, let's start the foreclosure. But I will need, you know, y'all to vote on that or say, yeah, yes. Go ahead with it, because at this point...
And we have several of those out there with judgments on them. I mean, we ran, you know, we ran about, I think, 40, 30, through, you know, the court. So there's still a lot of properties with judgments out there. There's one down this morning. You know, there's several. There's some vacant properties with junk on them. I mean, there's lots that have judgments running at $200 a day or $700 a day. If we start closing all them out,
it'll fix your budget.
You'll have your budget money. Or you want to own property, then you can sell it or whatever you want to do with it.
But I've been talking to some, a lot of the other counties, and you are correct, that they got the land development boards. They don't go through all this. They go through those boards, and a lot of this stuff, guys, that we have to deal with, the land development board takes care of it, and it never comes here. We're not sitting up here hours arguing about something. They take care of the land development board, handles it, takes care of it, and it's out of our hands, and it's all on them. And that from what I've talked with a lot of other counties, that's how it's handled, and that's the correct way to do it, and I feel we should go.
We started that. We need to finish that. We need to get that. I agree with you. We need to get that going.
So we've initiated that process, and that's where I was telling you that you got to pick a citizen from your district that's going to run your desk.
Okay. January.
We're working. Everything that we're doing is trying to make our lives easier and your lives easier. And streamline this and make this a simple process. The county will grow.
Well, me personally, the rest of the board feels, I think we need to move forward with the land development board.
Yep.
To handle, to help streamline.
Yep. We got some citizens wants to talk a little bit. Come on. One at a time. One at a time. Come on. Come on.
My name is Lori Hartman. I live in Old Town. Currently in a garden.
But you in a park. That's exactly right.
My question is, this variance that we grant these people, why are we granting it to the land and not just the person yet? That makes no sense whatsoever. Each time someone has to apply, they pay money.
Well, I've thought about that long and hard because I think you may have already asked me that question.
Probably.
And several other ones ask it. The land is already, it's going to have electricity already on. They've got septic, they got a well, they got all the stuff all in place. So when they sell the property, say you sell the property, all that's kind of hard for us to go out there and have them shut everything
down. No, you don't have to shut it down. You just tell them there's no variance on it anymore. Yes, you have to.
But they already got electricity, ma'am.
So I can answer this.
He can answer that.
This is a land use. It's not a ownership question. It's a land use item. And so when you look at your zoning map, maps control everything, whether it's a flood map, a zoning map, a density map, no matter what it is, everything's controlled by maps. You look at that little piece of property right there, that parcel ID number, it's going to list what are permitted activities, what are special exceptions. And if that special exception falls in that zoning district, then they legally have the right to apply for that special exception. They fill out their application, they apply. It passes, it doesn't. Either way, it's 50-50. And we tell people that all the time, like, this is a land use item. It's annual renewal. Here you go. And they know that going into it. They know ahead of time that it's a 50 amp service and Swanee is a 100 amp service. And just so anybody doesn't know, it's 100 amp and Swanee because they have a rider pump that requires amperage for that. So that's why that is like that. But we had a gentleman come before the board one time that gave me a real hard time wanting to hire amperage. And same thing, it's like, why do we have rules that we don't follow them? He knew the rules when he signed up, and that gentleman sold that piece of property.
Yes, he worked on me pretty good.
Yep, and everything is disclosed up front.
With that being said, Leon, I mean, but in my mind, I see a lot of properties sold with RVs on them. Sometimes they sell them with the RV.
I don't ever see one of these signs go up out there. They just transfer the power from one guy to the next. But you said technically they should go to you. They have to reapply. A sign has to go back up for special exception and voted on.
Let's use terms that would be in your world.
Ah, okay. I'm a little slow, but sometimes.
We have a appraisal that's approved, DEP approval. If you wanted to sell that, that would be a land use item that would sell with that property. That particular piece of property is zoned for that. These people have applied and got that particular special exception in their zoning district. And so it's
so
a
it goes with the land.
And,
but you just, I thought you said it was a 50-50 shot whether it gets renewed or not.
That's because it comes before the court. You have the power to say no. You have the power to say yes.
We do.
You do. And even if we set the land adjustment
for yeah, right. If we're not notified, then we don't. I'm
we
just.
Still have. We could set a whole other board up, and they could go before them and say, hey, there's 40 protests against it. And they decide, hey, I don't like their decision. I want to appeal it to the commissioners. It's going to show up on your agenda, and they're going to bring it before you, and it's real simple. You can say, hey, it didn't make it through the first board round. I don't make it through this board. Or you can listen to the complaint. You can listen to it. But you ultimately get the final say. You delegate that authority to them if there's no opposition or whatever, they hash it out and pass it, whatever. So be it. But the commissioners still get the final say.
Yep.
And I imagine the day-to-day little odd end stuff, you're not going to see. It's the real controversial ones that you're going to see. And the truth of the matter is you got more important things to do in the county than the list of people arguing about a camper. And that's the reality. I mean, y'all got ditches to dig. Water to drive. You know, that's just reality.
We got two more here who wants to speak.
I have one question now. For a local with the Dixie County Clerk's Office, if they don't pay the renewal, does that land use go away and then the next person has to come up and reapply?
So if you were to say, where is the breakdown? That's the breakdown. It's a follow-up. It's to go back and check this year who didn't pay. So 206 people did pay. We mailed out 700. We now have 500 pieces of property to either go and try and track down and see if it's being used for campsite anymore or not. Or, hey, I bought this last year and I didn't get no letter. Who knows? I don't have the staff person to say, hey, this is your job right around and do what your time all day.
But if we collect some more of this money, we can hire a full-time person for you.
Exactly.
And have a whole bunch to go somewhere else.
Don't get me wrong. We'll take the extra staff you want to put in our apartment.
Got that.
Yeah. All right. Ms. Margaret.
I just have a question about could you use that, I guess it's the RV site you go into. Like some come into a residential neighborhood. And it's all big homes, and you got RVs part-time cycling out. That's the bylaws probably out there. Well, they're not working.
The bylaws normally
so if they agree they're coming, they come in and do it, but there's some in our neighborhood. But some of them come in with the RV exception to build and live in it while they're building. But they get it because they're not building. They just bring in more campers and campers.
Under that criteria, if they have a pull an inspection for them so many days, Leon is supposed to have the power to pull power.
I'm saying is there someone in there that can make them do that because we have the five of us now, Steve went in and Cozen did it and the guys got out to two RVs, but it's campers. I'm not going to tell you what we put up with, but it's in a residential, the whole neighborhood is residential.
They're supposed to be pulling
them. There's no way you can keep them out of the residential neighborhoods that's already there, been there for 50 years or longer.
Well,
I mean, we're retired there, but we retired with RV.
Okay. The two campers next.
Me.
The two campers that are next door to our property are unique. And I say this because here's why. This is a very controversial one that has to go before the magistrate. The gentleman who purchased that originally, he applied and he put two septic tanks down and he put in a 200-amp power pole. And then he split property. I'm not sure why he was allowed to split it. It was it should have been called a non-buildable lot just as soon as he split it. We proved through documentation that, hey, parcel number changed. It changed because it got split. And we've done notified him of this. Well, his immediate response is to be able to sell it. And we said, well, we've already flagged it. And I have full faith that we'll get resolved and that's going to go away. But that goes back to, we've been fighting that now for 3 years.
We don't need no more.
Well, that's why I'm asking, is there a way you can write, do something with them exceptions so that they can't come into a residential neighborhood if it's already zoned residential and has been for 50 years or longer, or, you know, no RV in these things. Put it on a vacant piece of land that's from RV if they're passed. But if it's already a residential neighborhood and nobody wants an RV site in there, can't you do something to stop that?
Well, that's
before it starts? Is that
yeah.
I mean, when you're changing all of this and doing it, can't you do something?
We can't just legally go in there and blank it out and say, hey, you know, this was previously allowed and we're just going to delete it, you know. We can't do that. It has to be passed through ordinances. Any text amendment changes has to be done through ordinances.
Well, that's what y'all doing now.
No, we're restructuring and we're removing building code items from the LDRs. They should have been removed in 2001 when Florida adopted the building code anyway. But in your particular case, that's not being used as an RV special exception law. That is a violation. And possibly another violation across the street then too.
We got one more man that needs that was standing there wanting to speak.
But as far as want to change the zoning to say,
hey Jamie,
can't have that.
Yes, sir.
It's up to that.
I got a question for everybody.
Hang on, just
Go ahead.
Go ahead, finish, Leon.
That particular neighborhood would generate an HOA if that's what they wanted to do. They would have their own private bylaws, covenants that they enforce. We have a zoning map, zoning ordinances. Those are what we enforce. We don't do the restrictions or private covenants on
the homeowners association can go over and above what we require.
Correct. We have a subdivision, quote unquote, that is supposed to be housed only, but it's not zoned houses only. It's zoned RSF. Residential single family / mobile homes. And we permitted this guy to have a mobile home. And the neighbors come out and got this irate. Like, hey, this is supposed to be house only. I hope you have an HOA because it's zoned for mobile homes. We don't enforce deed restrictions. theft between private companies, between neighbors.
And with that being said, one other thing, a lot of the older subdivisions had regulations and only certain things were supposed to go in those subdivisions. But if those was not re-upped at the
recorded
every so many years, all those exemptions goes away. As far as cutting trees, putting in different sidelines, whatever. If it was there in the beginning and not renewed, it becomes non void.
All right, WC, go ahead.
My question is why is it that the violators is the ones with all the power? The violators is the ones with all the whatever they got. It's like the county ain't got no saying nothing when it comes to the violators. The violators are going to appeal. The violators are going to get a lawyer. I want somebody's foot to put down and say to hell with the violator and put them where they ought to be. They violating, let's make them know it. Let's take it away from them. We've been fighting a crab trap over there for over 3 years. And until we get it in the hands of somebody that ain't run by the violators, we never going to get nowhere. And you can tell them WC said that. I said it and I meant it. We got to get somebody in charge that don't say, oh, well, we're going to appeal it, and, well, I'm going to let them appeal it. No, don't let them appeal it no more. Let's find a way to make them understand they have to go by the rules like everybody else. Until we do, we ain't getting nowhere. And that's why I'm aggravated with a whole bunch of it. You know, we fight and fight and fight. We can't help our citizens that need help, just like Wayne and Margaret did, because the people doing the violating is going to scare us about, they don't know I'm scared of me. They need to be dealt with. And that's what needs to happen to stop this nonsense. You know? By golly, until we get somebody that's going to quit. You know, okay, well, we can't do nothing to them. That's just so much crock of crap. I don't even know how to act. But anyway, that's the only way you're going to stop the violators is make them know they're the ones violating everybody else's rights and the county rules.
So we wrote it up. It's turned into code enforcement.
I know, Leon. I'm just aggravated that it's took us all these years and we ain't got nowhere. I ain't blaming on none of you guys. But I do blame it on the one that keeps slapping their hands and turning them loose. And everybody knows who that is. And they ain't in that room. But anyway.
All right,
I'm done.
You done? All right.
Yep. Yeah, for this minute I am.
We've been a property owner in Dixie County now since 2021.
What's your name?
My name is Jeff Brown.
Jeff, okay, thank you.
My wife and I have been property owners. We own a piece of vacant land north of 19. We have been on the fence about whether or not to apply for an RV permit. Based on the advice that we received, throughout the county, we were advised that we could go ahead and apply, but we probably wouldn't get it. $300 RV application, I believe it's a $550 sewer fee to get the sewer put in. It's a minimum of $1,000 impact fee. There's absolutely no reason why the property tax assessment shouldn't go up for the improvements of sewer water, because you also have to have a water source. That was septic tank contractors, well drilling contractors, was county officials at work, was a lot of people at work. If there's going to be a structure put in,
like a pole barn. And by the way, the RV camps don't have the pole barns, but those high-dollar RVs get parked under pole barns in storage facilities when they're not in use. So I believe the land development code indicates that I can park it. I can park the RV on the property the day I'm on the property. I just can't use it for more than 12 days without an RV special exception permit. So as far as the tax base and those types of things, what I'm hearing is 90% of the code violations, 60-some-odd number, are from the past, from the old ways that things were being done. All the new people that are trying to move here and enjoy this area, seven of them, and they're self-correcting, what I heard. Lady over here wants to come down and enjoy. Maybe she can't afford to buy a house right now and increase the tax base to the level that the other gentleman's paying in Swanee that has the house, but there's no reason why it doesn't change the tax base. I would just like to see things done fairly and equitably here as far as who gets it and who doesn't get it. Having read the land development code, but rural residential, you're not allowed to, it's not a special exemption. Okay. So certain zonings allow for the special exemption, and certain other zonings don't. So people that come up here and say, I live in a neighborhood where there's all houses and there's a mobile home there, it sounds like they just have special problems with enforcement, not with the procedure that's put forward. So if I apply for the RV permit and pay the $300, it's only in the interim of building my house. We intend to build a house. I don't think that the people that are coming here and contributing to the community and putting this community to work should be penalized for what happened back in 1993 when the homeless couple moved into the property and it's running the generator and nobody came to fix them. So I don't know. We came to the workshop. I wasn't supposed to say anything, by the way. Supposed to be a fly on the wall. But I was under the impression that this workshop was in place to see if you were going to, if the county was going to move forward with issuing these special exemptions. Not whether or not it needed to be changed or we needed to increase the fee from 300 to 600. But I know that anybody out there on the fence is waiting to get one. We can certainly afford it. But, you know, the question is, why go through the trouble if I'm not going to get it? No questions, I guess. But I do have a question. The $62,400 that was collected on 208, where's that? Where does that money go to enforce the program?
It goes back into the building department budget, to my understanding.
It goes into
the general fund.
It goes into the general fund.
So the $215,000 would also go into a general fund. Does the commission who issues the special land use, why doesn't the commission then have a consent agenda item at a regularly scheduled meeting where they renew all of the RVs permits that have paid their fee for the year? And if you're not on that consent agenda to be renewed, then go to the CFPC and give them a list of everybody to turn the power off.
That's honestly my impression in the workshop. How can we improve or not improve the program, what you're saying? And I'm here just listening, honestly, to what you're saying, because I've heard several good ideas, honestly,
yes,
out through to see how we can make the program better or if the program's even worth doing. So your ideas, and I'm glad you were a fly on the wall, so that is a great idea to do what you're talking about.
Thank you. I just want to be clear, though. There's no reason why you're not going to increase your tax base by doing this. When people make improvements, you will, I'm going to disagree firmly with the other gentleman, because you're going to collect more taxes on a piece of property that's being used, and you're going to put community members to work, and you're going to spend money in your local economy if they're using your property. If it's sitting or vacant, you're not going to get those increases. So, thank you.
Thank you. We got one more.
I'd like to make one comment before we get him, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
Well, that's the reason we're having this workshop, is trying to figure out ways to enhance this, to make it move more smoothly and put some teeth into it to do something with it, not saying you're a bad person or whoever, but most of the time what's happening is we give a special exception to someone, then they sell it to someone else, and then it turns into a crack house or a junkyard. And that's what's really thriving all of our code enforcement problems and all that. But we're trying to figure out ways to put some teeth into the system to alleviate that from happening, sir.
It's an annual renewal. So even though it's a land use...
But if they come and pay the $300, at this point, we do not have the manpower to send somebody out to each location to see if they've done changes or done something.
Then that's an enforcement issue. It's not an issue of the issuance of the variance.
Yep.
I know you said that you didn't have enough money to do the enforcement, but with $215,000 that comes in revenue off of 700 permits, that seems like it would be enough to cover the enforcement of the program.
This county is so upside down, bro, that $215 wouldn't even touch half of what we were proposing.
All right. Short time. Go ahead.
Okay. My name is Lee Boyer, and a couple of years ago, I came down here with a couple of pals, and I bought a lot, and another buddy of mine bought a lot, and another buddy of mine bought a lot. I got parcel ID 16, 13, 12, 2, 29, 27, quadruple, not 1,000. So I grew up I've been coming up here. Dixie, Levy, Gilchrist County were the three counties, the tri-county area, the Chamber of Commerce, the Board of Realtors, all worked together all my life to come up here fishing. So I always wanted to have a spot. Couldn't afford one on the water, but my buddy did, and he went to make the exception, and he got shot down. He wasn't here. He didn't think he had to be here. I figured the way it was all said, that, you know, it was a zone for it, so you'd get it. Well, there was one across the street, one thing and another. He got fed up with it. He sold his. He's gone. Well, I still got one. And it's out here on the side of the road, down here, lot 100. Now, I was saving up so I could do the next step. I understood the next step was to go get a culvert and a driveway, you know, line rock over it. And so I went down there to get a permit, just like you're supposed to do. And they said, oh, no, can't do that. We're trying to get rid of the RV lots. What? Well, they having a big meeting tomorrow night. I'm a garbage man. I just drove from Jacksonville, getting as hard and fast as I could get here, to try to figure out what we can do to make this practical. My understanding is that there's people that's not paying their fees, but there's people that are willing to pay the fees. And it seems like if you're trying to enforce something and there are people that aren't paying their fees, you can shut off their electricity. You got a code enforcement officer, so you can start foreclosure proceeding once you get the property. I know it takes that because it's something I had in Hamilton County. So it takes a code enforcement officer to be able to foreclose on it. Well, you've got that. You turn that around. You got more of your revenues. The gentleman here was pointing out that you have these permits that are issued. $215,000, well, that's a pretty good living for, like, three people, maybe. So it seems to me that if somebody gets delinquent or doesn't perform the way they should, you shut off their power.
You can shut off their water. You can shut off their electricity.
And then ultimately, you can send code enforcement out there and start foreclosure proceedings. It just has. It takes the determination to do it. But in the meantime, I'm stuck. I can't take the next step. I can't put a culvert in the ditch. I can't put lime rock over it. And I, you know, I want to get in a shed. I've got my RV and I've got the boat. I'm dead in the water.
I don't understand that on my aspect. I'm appalled that they didn't issue a permit or whatever. Getting a driveway installed to your property has nothing to do with a resident. An RV or whatever, that puts access onto your property, which puts less burden on the county of fixing a shoulder of that road. If you're exiting and entering your property without a proper driveway, that puts more work on the county. So whether you're using it for whatever, you should have been issued a driveway permit to access your property. I'm appalled. I apologize wholeheartedly, and I hope someone, Dwayne, or someone can address that at where at the county yard or wherever you went to pull that permit, because that is not correct.
When I said it
never
was an RV, they said you can't do anything because it's an RV.
Well, I totally apologize, sir. I really do, and I'm ashamed to say so.
Okay.
Should have never been turned away.
So can I go back there tomorrow and apply? Stop taking them.
The driveway is different. If he wants to put a driveway there, let him put a driveway.
Well, wait a minute now. Why would I want to throw good money after bad if y'all are going to say I can't put an RV
That's
there?
What we figuring out right now. And we're going to have, in my understanding, we're going to have one more of these workshops before we even make our minds up what we're going to do.
So I can just hang up and give my next steps.
Well, you saying that if you want to put a cover and lime rock on it.
Well, he'll have to do whatever. There's supposed to be a permit pull from the county. The county guy goes out to the property, looks and determines whether he needs a culvert or lime rock turnoff. It doesn't matter if you got a cow pasture with cows on it or whatever. If you're supposed to have a driveway from the property line. Once the driveway is approved by the county, then it's the county's responsibility to maintain that driveway from the street to the property line. But the homeowner is supposed to put out the initial expense to install the driveway from the street to the property line.
Ballpark, do we have an idea when I'll be able to apply for an RV permit or if I will ever be able to apply again?
There's no one said you couldn't apply. You can apply for one tomorrow. For an RV special exception.
We put them on hold. We
put them on hold.
We did put them on hold right now. Yeah.
We have another meeting scheduled, at least one more workshop, prior to any decision being made by the board, whether or not to open back up and run as normal or not. And that one is in 2 weeks, November 3rd. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
2 o'clock.
So we have another one then. So no decision will be made by the board until after that.
We're getting ideas from people, and then we're going to, at the next workshop, then that'll give us a chance to discuss and go over them ideas, and then at the meeting, then we'll go from there.
Okay. Well.
And then if we decide to go ahead with RVs, if you're there at that meeting, then you will know right then whether you can go the next day and apply for it or not.
And what do I do with that property if I can't put an RV on it? It ain't big enough to cattle.
Build a house.
Well, you're trying to sell it.
So,
now,
hey,
right?
No, well, I would sell it.
It's for sale for $30,000, correct?
Yeah, I would sell it. Absolutely. One buy.
No. I already got one. Right.
You can. You can do pretty much what you want to. You can put your driveway in. You can put a well in. You can put a septic tank in, and you can market it with those improvements for someone that might want to belong.
Okay. Well, everybody, y'all have a good Halloween.
Okay. We'll see you at the next workshop.
Thank you, and I apologize again for them turning you away on the driveway. That shouldn't have been done.
All right. We're going to have one more lady to talk, and then we're going to have a recess, and then we'll go into our regular meeting.
My name is Virginia Sanchez, and I'd like to command the board for this meeting this afternoon. I've heard some really good ideas, and I've heard some concerns.
concerns that I think we all need to look at seriously and consider. And Mark said there's always going to be an exception. And we're going to look at hardships. There's a lot of things that's got to be looked at. But one thing I'm hearing throughout this whole meeting is enforcement issues. We don't have the people.
That's it.
And it goes right back to like what Karen and I were discussing here for a minute. It goes back to the whole garbage issue. You don't, like WC said last time, if you don't have somebody to run this program, and somebody to be full time, maybe even two people, it sounds like.
Yep.
And I think we could generate enough money in the budget that would pay for those positions. And I know that at the last meeting, someone said there had been some money allocated to help run the garbage program. There was a half-time position or something, but they said some money had been set aside for...
No, we would have to.
Okay.
We would have to have a part-time position.
Okay.
In order to make...
Had it been budgeted?
It has not been budgeted.
Okay. So we're going to have to look at reallocating some funds, and Jerry, I know what you're saying. It's tough. But this program will not work no matter what kind of rules, no matter what you come up with, if you don't have the manpower to enforce it. So we're going to have to find the money to do that. And I think the money is in the program itself. If we need to be charging enough that it will generate enough money to pay for the county college that's going to be involved in running this program. Thank y'all very much.
Anybody else?
Anybody else? I need a motion.
Motion to adjourn.
We got adjourned. We're going to take about a 15-minute recess, then we'll start our regular meeting. 15? Well, do you want, how long do you want? 20?
30
days. How you doing? I know you're going to
Mr. WC, is Mr. WC, are you still online? Is WC still on the line? Put him on unmuting. WC, can you hear me?
We're just trying to catch up.
We're just hoping to catch up.